Hey, welcome to Busting Balls. I'm Pat Caputo, along with the webmaster, Eben Jenkins, Gentman Jenkins to himself, and I think some people out there in the world, certainly in the X world. It's great to be here, talking drafts, prospects, the future, Busting Balls. Like us, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, iTunes Store, Google Play Store, Odyssey.com, Pat Caputo 98 on X. Gentman Jenkins on X for Evan, and of course the 97 won the ticket accounts and Facebook. And just today I want to get into Lions. Lions are in this situation where they have a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And the reasons why the Lions, number one, are as good as they are is they have procured young talent. They have drafted exceptionally well. And we all know about what they did getting Laporta and Branch and Jahmyr Gibbs and the great draft picks like Aiden Hutchinson, Penei Sewell. I mean, you go down the list. Amon-Ra St. Brown in the fourth round is an all-timer. Aylah McNeil. They've done an absolutely incredible job drafting and a lot of top-end star players. But the drafts continue to be Brian Branch, did I mention Kirby Joseph? I mean, this just, you got all these Pro Bowlers and all pros, and there are going to be a couple players going to have gold jackets. But the drafts, Evan, in this kind of way, are they're just the gift that just keeps giving. And, if you look at the Lions when they're injury depleted defense, you said, well, they really don't have anybody because people did not think much of Josh Pascal. They didn't ex think much of Levi Osirike because they felt like, hey, those guys are not going to be contributors. They've been hurt and all that. Well, they've played well here. When they've turned to different players, for example, Christian Mahogany. Christian Mahogany so he had 75 snaps, but in those 75 snaps, he's played elite level guard. You're talking about a fifth round draft pick. And it's like everybody that they plug in and play. Now, I think we look at the Lions in the future, and people are like so focused now. But this is a team that if they win the Super Bowl, could win multiple Super Bowls and be a destiny, a dynasty. I'm sorry, like that. Their destiny may be to be a dynasty. And it's also an organization that when you look at it, could end up losing this year and be that rare team. Really, there haven't been too many teams that have only got to go way, way back for a team that lost the Super Bowl and ended up going back there. But the Lions, they're definitely set up to be the exception to the rule.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, Pat, because you mentioned Levi and Pascal, and those are two guys that like maybe were a blemish on Brad Holmes' drafting career with the Lions, and now those are the two like guys that have been here the entire season. They have avoided injury. There has been little ones with them, but nothing major that they had to sit out, and they've played really, really well. Even this game against the Vikings, Pascal running down Darnold and just making plays, and it's just it's kind of crazy because roughly 2 years ago, you and I were recording a podcast saying you can't make this up. And
Right.
they've gone the exact opposite to where almost you can't make it up because here locally in Detroit, it's been hard to believe in the Detroit Lions until Dan Campbell got everything going. And now, Pat, it almost seems like, and this kills me to make the comparison, but they seem very, very similar to Michigan from what last year, where just seemed like if there was obstacles, they were going to overcome them. And Pat, I thought the Vikings were going to give them hell, and they outcoached, outperformed, out-schemed, out everything the what two seed, what could have been the two seed in the NFC, the second best team. They were 14-2. That's a pretty damn good team, if you ask me. And I just, Pat, you're right with all the players that you named to start with what they drafted. I mean, a lot of people wanted to knock Brad Holmes for drafting Jahmyr Gibbs at 12, and you know what? We're in the business of reactions, and that's fine. But right now, he's one of the best, if not the best, next to Derrick Henry, running back in the entire NFL. He reminds me a lot of what Chris Johnson did when he came in with the Titans. Now, they're a little bit of a different player, but if you get this kid open field, I mean, good night. What he
I
did
know.
against the Vikings, it's like,
And
I
he
didn't
makes
know
it
if
look easy too when he breaks through, yeah.
especially after taking that hit from Van Ginkle, that you were like, oh my God, he's not going to play the rest of the game. Pops right back up, comes right back out and produces. I mean, you go look at Netflix, Craig Reynolds, another guy that hasn't played barely at all this year. Montgomery goes down, and he fills that role perfectly, getting those tough yards to be able to spell Gibbs.
But actually, he was from the previous regime.
Isn't that great? Well, so was Ben Johnson.
Yeah. But so was Dinsdale in their front office. But, you know, they did have some holdovers. No, but one of them, you know, for example, you mentioned blemishes on Brad Holmes' record. So we talk about, okay, looked like Paschal's like not that good. Mm-hmm. Uzarike looked like he was going to bust out and not really play in the league hardly at all. Milan Famwu, who was the first benefit that they got from the Matthew Stafford trade with that third round pick. Last year, he came in and played a key role. Now, all of a sudden, he's back, and it makes, you know, a possible key role as well. Tyrion Arnold, you know, before he got hurt in that game, was really good. That was his best game. So, like, if we're talking about players like Giovanni Manu, who hasn't played at all, we're talking about players like Broderick Martin, who people are going, oh, that was a bust. You know, you haven't seen much of Vaki, but everybody kind of likes what they've seen of Vaki. You're talking about players like Ennis Rakestraw, who got hurt, but you think, well, you know, what's that going to be? If you add all those to all these players that they have already that are star players, as they develop these guys, I wouldn't put sell any of those guys short. I'm looking at Dan Campbell. Might as well be Brad Campbell. I'm looking at these guys, and you got to admit that they've missed on hardly anybody, because that league is known for players who just absolutely don't play. The Lions organization, you mentioned the podcast we did, You Can't Make It Up. A huge portion of that podcast was spent on bad drafts. I mean, just, you know, if the Lions got a second rounder or a third rounder, it was almost like a miracle if they were really good players. Now it's just up and down the whole line, you know? So, I mean, it's unbelievable how well Mahogany, I didn't know why he was still there in the fifth round, to be honest with you. But my gosh, is he a good player.
And they might need him in the playoffs. I mean, Zeitler went down with look like a hamstring injury, and those are tough for huge human beings like himself. But, Pat, do you ever remember in all – you've covered a lot of teams – a team that, like, you can look at the GM and you can look at the coach and just completely trust what they're saying, because it doesn't seem, it seems like whatever they touch just kind of turns to gold right now. And it's still a little unfathomable in my eyes to sit and believe what I'm actually seeing, because it's not something I thought I would. And I'm still have to get over that. And I understand that I need to get over that, but years of trauma will do that to a person. And I don't want to put in blind faith. And I am the kind of guy, like, I'm always going to root for him, but it's like, I'll believe it when I see it. But in your years, I mean, maybe the Red Wings when they were winning all those cups, but I'm sure there was obvious mistakes with somebody or something.
Well, I said, Evan, a lot down through the years, on shows, that if the Lions ever got the right coach, the right GM, and the right quarterback, they were going to have a chance to be really good. They never had that combination. Really, the first genuine GM they hired was Bob Quinn. I mean, they always had like some kind of a weird way of succeeding up to the GM level. You know, it was Russ Thomas, and then they had Chuck Schmidt, who, you know, was really like the head vice president of seven vice presidents. I used to joke they had one for every day of the week from back in the day, and he was an accountant by trade. He wasn't a football scout or player or whatever. And they always had. Then they had the Matt Millen years, and Martin Mayhew was hired as an assistant because he put together a nice plan that he submitted to Ford and he liked. And Martin's a pretty smart guy, but he wasn't really the first time they went out and actually scoured for GM was Quinn, and that failed. But they got Brad Holmes. Their coaches had success other places, and they would come here and just be overwhelmed by whatever this is here. Dan Campbell, I think, playing here had an advantage that way. He kind of knew the landscape. And I think Holmes did too, because his uncle Luther Bradley is, you know, been in the community forever and played for the Lions. So they knew what they were getting into that way, and they've handled it well. And they got the right quarterback. It might have been by mistake. It might have been by design. Seems to me they were just taking Goff to try to transfer the cap space to get the draft picks for Stafford. But truth be known, Goff's turned out to be the ideal quarterback in the ideal place. So they have that together. But to your question about frame of reference, when the Tigers won their last World Series, they had a great general manager in Bill LaJoie and a great manager in Sparky Anderson. When the Pistons had the Bad Boys Pistons, they had an all-timer GM in Jack McCloskey and a truly great coach in Chuck Daly. When the Red Wings won, there was remnants of Jimmy Devolano, who built the organization. Ken Holland was in the pipeline, and they had arguably the greatest hockey coach of all time in Scotty Bowman. When the Going to Work Pistons got it together, it was Joe got it together. And Rick Carlisle's been a long-term coach. He's won a championship, and Larry Brown was the perfect coach to come in and put him over the top. When you had the Red Wings in their renewal, you had Holland, and you had a tremendous coach, at least technically. I mean, he turned out to be I don't even know how to describe that the way Mike Babcock is, but nobody would say he was a bad coach. You know, he's a great coach. And those combinations go together. This group has been phenomenal, and they haven't won a championship yet. Those people all did. We'll see how it goes. And of course, the Tigers had that streak where they had Leland and Dombrowski. Leland's already in the Hall of Fame, and I think Dave will be in the Hall of Fame someday too.
Yeah, but they just didn't win it. That one's going to be a sore one for me, Pat. But what you brought up something very, very interesting to me, because you always hear about how tough of a media market New York is, and coaches don't want to go there because they don't want the questioning. I think you hit the nail on the head with Dan Campbell understanding here, because I think a lot of coaches that came here couldn't understand why the media was instantly like negative about the team if they would lose or this or that, or bring up the history. But you brought in a man that knew the history, that played on an 0-16 team, that saw the media, that understood that the fans, if they had a winner, would support it like no other, because they supported the team when they were losers. So, I mean, imagine if they won. And I think you were so right on that even in Dan Campbell's first year and a half was god awful. That 1-6 start in his second year, we were like, that they did it again. They got another bad coach, and then boom, it clicked. And it's absolutely amazing. And I think that does have a lot to do with it, to be able to understand what the city had been through, what the fans had been through, heck, what the media had been through covering the team and trying to spin it into a positive year after year after year after year, when in reality there wasn't a positive year after year other than a few players in Calvin Johnson or Barry Sanders or stuff like that. And I think you hit the nail on the head with that. And I never really thought of it until you made that comment.
Well, I think it helped him. Every coach that the Lions have had, and sometimes they've had success, to a certain degree, has always fallen into the trap of, hey, you know, Jim Caldwell is the nicest man you can possibly imagine, became embattled and called, you know, the Dungeon of Doom. Schwartz at the end with the mic on was heard on a hot mic, you know, talking about the fans to shut up when they were booing during the game or whatever it is, you know, swearing, losing it. Bobby Ross was just totally bizarre. If you want to go back in the day, I mean, he couldn't handle that at all. And it's really been accentuated by what we do is sports talk radio. It's everywhere. And especially since our station has come into fold, because, mm-hmm. You know, our station is just an absolutely huge factor here in this city. The numbers speak for itself. And everybody's listening, everybody's talking. It's a huge contingent. It's impossible to just not pay attention to it, because it is actually the litmus test for how fans feel. Because mm-hmm. We take a lot of phone calls. We have a lot of interaction with fans. and there's a lot of passion there. And they tend to go from one extreme to another. And it's more so about the Lions than any other team because they have no track record other than this is what's been happening.
No, you're so right with that, because I go back and I look and I thought about all those interviews. Like, you're right with Jim Caldwell, who I thought was one hell of a football coach, but would never live in negativity. And I thought, you know, he had winning records while he was here, but just that he could never fathom, like, you know, we have a winning record, we made the playoffs. But that was never just good enough for the fans of Detroit or the media of Detroit or anything like that. And what we're seeing here with Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes, they're embracing the fans. You see Dan Campbell, or I mean Brad Holmes, high-fiving with the fans after games. Like, you don't see that from a lot of GMs in any sport. And I think what they have done and what they're doing is so impressive that it's even made me turn, and I'm one of the biggest pessimists there are.
Yeah, it's also, too, it's when now everybody loves them, but when they were 4-19-1 to start, how they reacted to that. Dan Campbell wasn't out there making excuses like these other coaches, or blaming the fans, or I don't know, the media in this town, the mainstream media, and a lot of the talk show hosts aren't particularly negative about the team. There, you know, there are some who just basically tell it like it is. There might be some that, you know, are critical just by nature, and that's fine. That diversity makes the world go round in opinion. But the bottom line about it is, they're not overly sensitive to it. They kind of understood it. And they did a little bit of, like, a victory dance after last year and all that, which didn't play well. You know, it just kind of looked stupid because that's not who they are. They're respected for not being like that and what they did. Goff was like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Goff handled that extraordinarily. Where here's a guy who got traded to the place that nobody wanted to be traded to, an organization of dysfunction, and look what he's become here. So it's an incredible story. It really is. And it's very different. And it all starts with their ability to draft players and develop them. And now that they've got some depth, they don't have to throw players to the wolves when they're rookies and before their time. They can let them marinate a little bit and then put them out there, and then the results are often very flavorful, Evan. Now, I know you loved that analogy. It was a beautiful one. So, but anyway, we enjoyed the podcast today. Hey, don't forget to like us. Google Play Store, Apple Play Store. Man, we love the Apple Play Store. The Odyssey.com app. Wherever you get your podcasts, like us, love us. We appreciate you listening very much. Till next time, we'll see you.